Back into order. And our action item is to consider the adoption of a resolution R1-2015-001. And there's a second resolution that I'll read into the record. Actually, staff can do that for restoration. Procedurally, what I recommend to the board is that we vote one vote for both resolutions. Typically, I like the cleanness of two votes, but the resolutions are very closely tied. However, if any board member objects to that procedure, the chair would entertain two votes, but I don't think it makes much sense. And then with that, we'll call on staff to make their presentation.
Good afternoon, Chairman Corbett, members of the board. My name is Jonathan Warmerdam. I'm an environmental scientist in your staff, and today I will be presenting on the public hearing to consider adoption of the policy in support of restoration in the North Coast region.
And I apologize, I forgot to read off the hearing procedure, so
sure.
I'm gonna briefly interrupt. Opening statements, this is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of resolution number R1-2015-001, policy in support of restoration in the North Coast Region, and Basin Plan Amendment and Resolution Number R1-2015-004, adopting the Basin Plan Amendment for the policy in support of restoration in the North Coast Region. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand up and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? Okay. And then please announce when you give testimony that you're sworn. Timelines for presentations are as follows. Staff, 30 minutes. Interested public, 3 minutes, with the exception of Ben Edelman, who will have 7 minutes previously and in a timely fashion requested the same. With that, start.
All right. Should I re-announce who I am? I'm Jonathan Warmerdam. I'm an environmental scientist with your staff. Thank you for having me back. As you'll recall, in November, we had a public workshop.
For the record, you're sworn. So,
and I am sworn. Yeah. Thank you. We had a public workshop on the proposed policy in support of restoration in the North Coast region. This is the follow-up to that for a public hearing for consideration of adoption. As we started during the workshop, we included a reference to the Clean Water Act, the first line of the Clean Water Act, which states that the objective of this act is to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters. This is a really important statement. We, as Chairman or Board Member Giusti, also stated it. It puts us on a path, on a direction. It's a call of duty for us of what we need to do, what our obligation is under Clean Water Act. And as such, we included this as the first line in the restoration policy. Today, the topics I'll be covering are the restoration policy elements, a quick summary of what it's made up of. We'll be discussing the Basin Plan Amendment narrative language, as well as a Basin Plan Amendment adopting resolution. We'll briefly touch on the CEQA elements, go over some of the public comments and the review and comments, as well as some proposed modifications. We do have one change sheet that you should have been supplied with that we'll go over. A brief modification that we're proposing also for your consideration, and then some next steps. Our vision statement. Matt, this morning, our executive officer went over our new vision statement that we developed: healthy watersheds, effective regulation, strong partnerships. And as we went through the process of visioning for our office, we highlighted some priority directives that we focused on. Of them, one of them was to focus on promoting restoration. And so this policy, what we're looking at today, is really teed up perfectly for moving forward with that process. It really speaks to exactly what our priorities are, and so it's of no consequence, I would say, that today we're having this hearing to move forward with this. The elements of the policy, as you'll recall, is first a declaration of a support for restoration and its utility for recovery of beneficial uses. And we recognize that a lot of the work that we do is focused on pollution control, but restoration is a really useful tool in addition that is we are promoting more and more and partnering with our other state and federal agencies to try and utilize to recover our impaired watersheds and help with our listed plant and animal species within our region and throughout the state. There are many obstacles also to restoration, implementation of them. Some of those are touched on in the restoration policy itself, including some of the issues with different types of permitting challenges that can take place, or some of the financial costs, and a number of different elements are touched on in the policy. It's a recital of the existing laws and regulations that we must consider when we're issuing a permit for a restoration project. Those are state and federal laws, as well as interpretations of how the basin plan applies towards restoration. And it discusses how the regional board and its staff have been supporting restoration, the different types of projects and programs that we're focused on and helping facilitate. Towards the end are some directives from the board to staff on how to promote restoration into the future, things to focus on, actions that will set us up over the next several decades, things that prepare us for unknown new types of land use activities and the influences that we're going to be facing with climate change effects. And so it really pinpoints us on a pathway into the future. And then at the tail end, there's a proposed basin plan amendment narrative that's included into that. So the narrative itself is it's distilled kind of shortened version of the policy, which codifies the regional board's support for restoration. It also, again, recites some of the legal requirements and considerations that must be taken when issuing a permit for restoration. And then it clarifies the non-applicability of the action plan for logging, construction, and associated activities, the prohibitions from that, in regard to otherwise permitted restoration projects. You also have in your packet an adopting resolution. This is specific to the Basin Plan Amendment language. It was a necessary component for inclusion of that language into the Basin Plan. It also has, it's all the procedural steps that are necessary for that adoption, including reference to CEQA, the state and federal anti-degradation permits, and that it meets the necessity standard of the Administrative Procedures Act. And as you know, the restoration policy relies on the substitute environmental document that was approved by this board for the temperature policy in March of 2014. In the temperature policy, there was an analysis of all of these potential impacts that could occur from different types of restoration actions. It also incorporated mitigations for restoration activities. You have a SED addendum, which is we went forward and analyzed to see whether the SED itself covered all of the potential types of impacts that could occur from restoration projects. As a result, we realized that the restoration policy will not be will not create any new additional impacts that were not already analyzed from the temperature SED. So a subsequent CEQA analysis was not required. We opened up the restoration policy for public review and comment starting November 17th. It was a 45-day review period. It ended on January 1st. Distributed pretty widely to over 1,000 email recipients, 3 newspapers, and it was posted on our website. The responses we got were largely in support of the restoration policy, and there were some important recommendations from it that we actually incorporated and made some modifications in. You have a strikeout and underline version within your packet, which shows some of those changes. They focused on kind of four different sets or types of proposed changes. We included tribal agencies as one of the reviewing bodies that reviews restoration projects. We also highlighted that Native American cultural beneficial use is an important element that can be influenced by restoration projects. We added a finding regarding the importance of monitoring and adaptive management, and identified several different types of reviewing considerations that the regulatory agencies have to consider when we receive an application for a restoration project. And then in addition, there were several minor editorial changes, which are also shown in there. You have that change sheet in front of you. I should probably just walk you through it. It's pretty brief, but I think it'll be easy if I show you the way. So if you, there is one sheet which you will see in your package, which has some colored revisions on it. What we did was we included a new finding, finding 18, the one at the top, which is specific to the Clean Water Act Section 401 concepts relative to federal licensing and permitting relationship with state certification. That has to do typically with like when the Army Corps of Engineers issues a 404 permit, that then results in us issuing considering issuing a 401 permit at the state level. So we felt that the restoration policy didn't touch on that quite enough, so we added that additional element, as well as several footnotes which describe, define point source, further define non-point source, and talk about pollutants, and also highlights the federal actions must be in conformance with state laws. Pretty straightforward stuff. We also, you'll see the second finding in green was an existing finding that was just relocated from further down in the document. It sequentially made more sense to have it here after we introduced this new finding. And then there was one other slight strikeout of under new finding 20 of non-point source and a footnote. Nothing too dramatic. So the next steps, in a moment, I'm going to be providing a recommendation to the board to consider adoption of the restoration policy. If it is adopted, afterwards we would be presenting the Basin Plan Amendment to the State Water Resource Control Board for consideration of adoption, then on to the Office of Administrative Law and on to the US EPA. If it goes through all those steps and then is incorporated in, we will also be just moving forward with the implementation of the restoration policy, promoting restoration, supporting practitioners, building partnerships, providing leadership, and more. All the things that are directed from the policy itself. So with that, our recommendation to the board is adopt resolution number R1-2015-0001, the policy in support of restoration in the North Coast region, and resolution number R1-2015-0004, adopting Basin Plan Amendment for the policy in support of restoration in the North Coast region. And with that, I'll turn to any questions you may have.
Board Member Massey.
Thank you, Jonathan. As usual, very nifty presentation. How does this work, because this is a Basin Plan Amendment, how does this work with the restoration stuff that you have done in Mendocino County, where we have had multiple permit process amalgamated under one?
Sure.
Would that in any way, by doing this as a basin plan, would it preclude any doing of that, or would it expand it, or does it neutral?
It would not preclude it. If anything, it promotes that kind of activity further for other parts of our region. Uses it as a model for other either counties or watersheds as a way to help facilitate restoration. So, if anything, it gives a nod and a thumbs up to that. Some of that is actually included in some of the directives to actually try and promote coordinated permitting programs.
Okay. Dandy, thank you.
Board Member Norn.
Mr. Chair, Jonathan, thank you. Always well done. I got to say, this policy is just such a no-brainer. I read this thing. I told you the other day I read this, and I was thinking, well, yeah, sure, absolutely. This is absolutely the path we're on, and I think it's really timely. It fits in well with much of the programmatic work that's done. You list out many of the programs that are running, whether it be 5C or Mendocino or some of the other things that are out there. And the concept behind this to make it better, easier, and more efficient to do these types of projects are spot on. Let me ask you, this is a policy statement. At the same time, there are some things in here like developing measurable success criteria, right, which I assume is an individualized basis. So how then do you envision this policy then to feed back to, say 5C or other things? Does it do that? Is that the intent then? Does it do things to other programs here and put forth requirements to them to do things that they're not doing now?
This is not a regulatory policy, so it doesn't specifically make any effect on those existing programs or permits. As far as how it influences 5C, again, I would say similar to how it promotes permit coordination programs, it also permits other actions by this agency to help promote that type of a program to help facilitate projects or programs like that, like 5C.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. I highly support this. Very good.
Thank you.
Any other board member comments or questions? I had just one to counsel and then a second one raised by the answer to Board Member Nairn's inquiry, and then a little bit of legal clothing for it. But to counsel Samantha Olson, the document consistently refers to CEQA, and I assume that includes the Title 14 CEQA regulations, which in turn include a certification process for environmental impact statements in 20,083.7.
That's correct.
Thank you. I also wanted one other clarification. I believe one of the changes we made is we have the resolution, but we are submitting the second resolution, submits it as a regulation. So there's a distinction between a regulation and regulatory that might get missed, but we are submitting it as a regulation, and I think that's a huge improvement and solves some of the other concerns I had. I did want to comment, I think, generically. One, I already did, the regulation was good. I think it's flexible and very broad in the way it can be interpreted to encourage restoration. I appreciate that we added a good tribal element, and I do predict the tribes are going to be more involved in restoration and already are in the basin to be some of the leading restoration specialists. So I think it's appropriate that we properly recognize that. In regard to the point source and non-point source, the Elway, Conda, and San Clemente dams were all treated as non-point sources, and that really gives a federal coloration to the interpretation under the Clean Water Act that they're non-point sources, and that's been an interpretation longstanding. Similarly, the state board has treated it that way, and similarly, the regional board has. And so, one, I wanted to indicate what we're writing up is a longstanding agency policy that should be given deference by the courts. And the other test is they want to make sure that the legislature didn't speak to the contrary. Well, clearly they didn't, and all these authorities held they didn't. They want it to carry out the purposes or not defeat the purposes of those acts, both Port of Cologne and the Clean Water Act, and it doesn't. And then as a consequence, part of our adopting this is to subject the decision that the restoration projects are non-source, including dam removal, and that the agencies should be given the maximum deference the courts can do under the law, Chevron case. So with that, I'm very, very happy to ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Eat my words. Brenda Edelman. I got too excited.
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I definitely support the concept of restoration. I just have a concern, but I have to predicate it by saying that I have not studied this, so it may be, my concern may be covered in the document. But basically, I want to support, give strong support to Alan Levine's letter, which basically expresses concern about situations where a property owner may have either intentionally or unintentionally done damage to his property and then turns around and wants funding to improve it. And I know this is a situation that has occurred in the past. For instance, if someone wants to rip out riparian because it gets in their way, and then they learn that, well, it's good to have riparian and it'll help them from losing part of their property through erosion, and they want to do a project to restore it. And I'm just wondering how this plan would address those kinds of situations where the actual property owner did the damage themselves and then wants someone else to pay to fix it.
So Samantha Wilson, your counsel. Footnote 3, I think, is spot on this issue. This policy is basically neutral as to the definition of a restoration project for the purposes of various other items where it becomes very relevant, such as do you get a grant of public money? Is there an offset? And that's precisely what's addressed in footnote 3, where it talks
about. What page
about
is that on?
It's on page 2, footnote 3.
Oh, okay, I don't have my glasses.
It says this restoration policy does not include a specific definition of the type of activities that qualify as a restoration project, as that determination is more appropriately made during a specific review process. The determination of net benefit of a given restoration project can be a factor for various permit fees, permit eligibility criteria, offset ratios, or prioritization of public funding.
Well, I'd just like to ask one other question, and that is if someone did something illegally, then it would be more strictly applied. And if they were, for instance, on a permit and didn't follow through on their permit and were out of compliance, would there still be a situation where they could get restoration funds to fix the project and not be held responsible?
I think that is much more detailed and beyond the scope of this policy. I don't think this policy changes would alter that universe that you just described in any way.
Okay.
But I will say, though, we are trying to streamline types of restoration that also are cleanup activities, and we don't want to get, you know, stumble in our own way of seeing things remedied. And so there's no extra help, but we are trying to streamline those permitting efforts.
But you understand where I see a possible sticky wicket in some situations where it could. I totally support cleaning up the environment and, where necessary, getting help to do it financially. But I also see people taking advantage if they see that as an opportunity to take advantage of noncompliance.
So. Our agency does fund some restoration projects. We would not fund a restoration project if it was a violation of an existing, that the damage was done as a violation of an existing permit.
Okay.
And so this policy doesn't change that. And other funding agencies like the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has a similar policy with regard to funding of those type of environmental damages.
Okay, thank you very much.
Board Member Massey.
You have no other public comment. In which case, Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt resolution R12015-001, as well as resolution number R12015-0014.
Second.
Okay.
Before you vote, can we integrate the change sheet as well?
As amended?
As amended.
Second.
Okay. Any further board discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Abstentions, the ayes carry. Thank you for a long process.
What that was?
Before we move on, I do want to recognize Alita Mangelsdorf if she is, I don't think, oh, she is. So great work that Alita has done prior to Jonathan taking up this project. Thank you, Alita, for all your efforts.
And she kept the fire alive some years when it was pretty thin. So, okay, the next item, development of